When you haven't found love, it can feel like everyone else has. It's in every movie, every song, and all the PDA. Looking for love sucks. Thankfully, California Psychics can give you the guidance you need to find the one. We guarantee, if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com and experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
Listen up, Friar faithful. 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable is on the air.
Unbelievable!
It's time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. The 97.3 The Fan crew is here for the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, delivered by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Everybody, to another edition of our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable. I am Ben Higgins, joined by part of our crew today. All the way on my left is Matt Scraby from our afternoon Gwynn and Chris show. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
We've got Woods and Paul right in the middle here. We just finished our four-hour show.
Hola.
And joining me right now, Braden Soprenet.
What's up?
And Tony Gwynn Jr. may be joining us at some point as well. But let's just jump right into the discussion. We got a team that basically has altered wins and losses every day this month. So, you know, we caught them on a loss day coming out of this round table. But there are clearly some longer issues that the Padres are facing. One of them is Dylan Cease, who was the losing pitcher. Again, he's now 3-9 on the season, which is pretty nuts. I don't think any one of us could have ever imagined that Dylan Cease could go 3-9, considering the kind of stuff he has, still has. The stuff is still nasty, but the results aren't there. So why, Matt Scraby, is Dylan Cease bringing such consistently poor results despite metrics that would tell you he should be a much better pitcher?
That's a great question, and I'm starting to think that maybe this is the pitcher who he is. Maybe he had a really good year with the White Sox. I know that he has had great games. I know he could strike out a bunch of guys, but when it counts, he ends up giving up the big hit, the big grand slam last night, and he puts them in really bad spots. He puts them in spots where they have to all of a sudden, they're down six runs, and it's not easy for this team when he gives up so many runs so early.
Woods, I think we all like Dylan Cease.
Yes.
As a person. I think he cares about his craft. I think he cares about his team. I know some people wonder, is he just not mentally strong enough in those situations? Because you know he can get the best batters out in baseball with the kind of stuff he has. What are you seeing that you think is the kind of the cause behind these struggles?
You know, he's such a it's funny, we talked about it off the air actually today. He's not an aesthetically bad watch. He's not when I watch Randy Vasquez pitch, who has had a much better season, I'm more nervous than when I watch Dylan Cease. I enjoy watching Dylan Cease pitch. He did turn in a really brilliant performance against the Dodgers, struck out 11 or 12. He was incredible. And that's, you're obviously not going to get that every time out. I really don't know what his issue is. Last night I thought he's got no-hit stuff. He is filthy. He's locked in. He's on. When the boys didn't score for him in the bottom of the first, I don't know, maybe that changed his mentality a little bit. Still went out and hung a couple zeros. Gave up a couple solo shots, which everybody can live with. But, man, when the walks, the hit, the grand slam, you look up, 6-0, and it's done.
Braden,
I don't know.
Is it mental with Dylan Cease? I mean, it doesn't seem to be a physical issue.
Maybe it is mental. I mean, he doesn't look like he's, you know, he doesn't have that lost look that Jackson Merrill currently has, right? So it doesn't look like a mental issue, for at least from the outside. I mean, we don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, he's been a very major disappointment, I think, in a Padres uniform. And that's saying something because he threw a no-hitter last year in a Padres uniform. But I think I just look back to before the Padres acquired Cease, I remember our talking points were about, well, his last year in Chicago was not very good. I mean, he got shelled in his last year in Chicago, and you're like, well, maybe that's a fluke. And then he has a pretty good year last year until the playoffs, and now you're seeing all the same numbers that he had in his last season in Chicago, and now that's two out of the last 3 years, he is not up to what he was in his first couple years in Chicago. So, you know, maybe he's trending to the spot. It just looks like to me he's missing a lot of his pitches over the heart of the plate, and good hitters are going to put that ball over the fence.
Could it be that when he was in Chicago in that last year when he got shelled, it was, oh no, I'm going to get traded and I don't like this. And then this year it's, I'm in my walk year, and I'm pitching for a contract, and I kind of like it here, but I'm probably not going to stay. I mean, it does that weigh on a
stability
thing? If you gave him today, if he agreed to a 6-year deal, does he go? Does he exhale and go out and dominate?
Goes throws a no-hitter the next day.
Those were also historically bad
White Sox teams.
Really so bad. It was easy for us, at least, to analyze it and go, oh, it's easy to write that one off. He was on a terrible team.
Yeah, we got Dylan Cease.
He was gonna have a bad year.
But he goes out and strikes out 8 to 10 guys. I mean, it's the same pitcher when he strikes guys out. It makes him look foolish. Corbin Carroll made him look foolish, like, up there at the plate. The suggestion was made on the broadcast that even by Mike Schilt, that he's just not getting away with mistakes the way that usually good pitchers do. Like, he makes the same number of mistakes. His are just getting demolished this season. And maybe it's the nature of the kind of pitcher that he is, that you're just looking for your one shot against him, and teams are capitalizing. But the other part of this discussion is, how is this affecting his free agency going forward? I've heard a lot of opinions. Woods, you've kind of been under the... it doesn't affect it at all because the arms like Dylan Cease just don't exist, you know, that commonly in Major League Baseball. So it doesn't matter what kind of numbers he puts up.
Durable. Like, he's as durable of a pitcher as there is. He makes his starts, not hurt. He takes good care of himself, takes good care of his arm. Guys, will he cost himself a little bit of money? Maybe a little bit. But I don't think it's going to be, Dylan Cease signs with the Reds on a 1-year, $4 million prove-it
deal. He's not getting a Shamania contract.
No, I think that guy's going to absolutely clean up in free agency because of who he is, what he's got, how durable he's been, and who his agent is.
And plus, every team thinks they can fix guys.
Every single team has an ego that says,
we can do
he's a tweak away.
Oh, especially with a track record like Dylan Cease. You're like, we'll take that chance. Absolutely.
I mean, look, and that whole point, it really means nothing. I don't think he's a Padre after this season. So I wish him the very best. And I think the question is, what do you do with him? You know, what do you do? Like, I was on the team. Well, he's going to listen. AJ, of course, is going to listen. We know that. That's in the books. He's going to listen on Dylan Cease. Can you get somebody back that helps your big league club? I think you can. Or do you just roll him out there, hope for the best, let him eat his 6 innings, hope that he finds it, unlocks it, and then at the end, he leaves in free agency. You get the comp pick, which is now a 4th-round pick, which is, not as good as the 2nd-round. But is that the plan of action for Dylan Cease?
Matt, you strike me as someone who wouldn't want to invest $30 million a year in Dylan Cease for 5 years going forward.
You are correct. I think, like Braden said, teams think they can fix these guys. But if the Padres have the pitching whisperer, and the pitching whisperer can't fix him, then who can fix him? Like, I have no idea what's going on with him, but I would not pay him that much. I wouldn't pay him $30 million a year. But Woods is right. Someone's going to pay that. Because making 32, 33 starts a year is worth something.
That's massive.
Even though you're not that, even if you don't pitch great in all of those starts, it's still worth something.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. So let's move from one struggling Padre to another. Jackson Merrill has not homered since May 27th. He is hitting under 200 since his hot start. I think we all kind of see the reasons behind it. Chasing pitches, not connecting on the pitches that he used to pitch with. So let me ask you guys to kind of play amateur baseball coach. What does Jackson Merrill need to do to turn it around, beyond just laying off pitches that he shouldn't be swinging at? Does he need to do something fundamentally different, Woods?
He needs to go out and get absolutely hammered. And I mean absolutely hammered. And I mean to the point where, like, Mickey Mantle style, where they have to drape the towel over his head and put his face in a bucket of ice. Like, I don't know that I can play, but I'm going to. He's just got to forget about this. It's so much easier said than done. And, of course, 45,000 people every single night at Petco Park. Everybody on the edge of their seats. What's Jackson Merrill going to do? There is – now, the contract he signed wasn't the biggest contract in the world, but it's still a hell of a lot more money than that kid's ever made. A hell of a lot more money. Both parents, school teachers. He has this weight of a playoff team. I'm a 2-hole hitter. I'm a 3-hole hitter. I'm a 4-hole hitter. I play with Manny Machado. I play with Xander Bogaerts. I play with Luis Arraez. Everybody's here. They're rooting for me. I make all this money now. I'm good. I got swagger. And Bro, he's clenching. He's the tightest guy. You see him on defense. He's smiling. He's having fun out in the field. Because he knows he's not going to screw up out there. There's no slumps with him defensively. None. He knows he's not going to slump out there. He's not going to start dropping fly balls, throwing to the wrong bag. At the plate, you are on an island. You are by yourself. And I've seen swings from him where it's like, I want to get this over with. First pitch, out. I popped out. Okay. And I think everybody that's ever played baseball has been in that spot where they go, I just want to get this over with. I go back to the dugout. I'm out. I didn't K. And I didn't look like an idiot. I missed my pitch.
Paulie, I saw one moment where Jackson Merrill looked like Jackson Merrill this week. And he wasn't at the plate. And it wasn't when he robbed the home run either. It was when Luis Arraez hit the home run.
Yeah.
And Jackson Merrill is shaking his head and throwing his tongue. Yeah. And I'm going, where's that Jackson Merrill been for the past month? Because he's still in there. He's there for his teammates. Oh, I just want to see that Jackson Merrill back for Jackson Merrill for the rest of this season, Paulie.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything Woods said, like technically with what we're seeing at the plate, the first pitch, lazy swings. Honestly, like, it's not a good answer, but I think the guy needs a little bit of luck right now. He just needs some balls to fall and get on base. Like, we see it, I don't know, feels like once a game where he ropes a ball and either the outfielders make a tremendous catch, they cover a ridiculous amount of ground in the outfield, it results in an out, and you see the frustration. Anybody that's played the game knows that feeling. You're like, my God, I can't buy a hit right now. And a little bit of that is some luck. You just need those. If a couple of those turn into hits, who knows what could happen mentally for him. He just starts getting more confidence. I think when you have a moment like that Luis Arraez home run, everybody on the team feels a boost of confidence. And he was able to be Jackson Merrill again for just even a few seconds.
I think, Braden, that Manny Machado might be the template here for Jackson Merrill. The guy who just sometimes doesn't give a bleep about, you know, what other people, Woods, you said it, doesn't care about what other people think.
Not even a little.
Doesn't care about expectations. Just goes out and he is himself. Through criticism his entire career, he has gone out and been himself. Does Jackson Merrill just need to go out and be himself like Manny Machado goes out there and just bees himself?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I've used this phrase before, you know, like that so what mentality. You kind of have to have that in baseball and just be like, so what? I mean, you can't let the previous plays mount up, and you can tell it's really bothering a guy that honestly has probably never failed in his life. I mean, he's probably never had this kind of failure in the thing that he has been the best at.
He had one mini slump in the minors.
Right.
And Dad said it was the best thing that ever happened to him. And hopefully, you know, you get the same thing out of him.
But
here,
in general, like from Little League to now, he's been the best player on every
starting
team
shortstop,
he's ever been on.
You know, batting third. Right.
Even in the big leagues, his rookie year, he was maybe the best player on the team.
Right. So he's been the best guy ever. And every play, he's always been the best player on his team. I mean, I'm sure the travel ball teams he's been on have been, he's been the best guy. I mean, I can see that in high school right now. The guys that I know that are going to be big time players are like far beyond better than everybody else, and he's definitely one of those guys. So being able to learn from the first time that you fail is very difficult, and he has to do it at the highest level. I liked what Torrey Lovello said on your guys' show about what Corbin Carroll did, and he's trying to go out there. I think you brought up a good point. Young people in general, you know, anybody to me under the age of 30, think they're indestructible and think they can do everything. And Jackson Merrill is no different. Corbin Carroll thought he could do whatever. And as Torrey Lovello mentioned on your guys' show, he's out there trying to hit a bunch of pitches that not even Mike Trout can hit. And it's like, focus on what makes you very good. I thought that was a good thing. And then, you know, yesterday in the broadcast, I think they told a story of Xander Bogaerts getting out of his first slump, where Andrew Jones called him out of the blue and said, find that one person that you're going to listen to and just listen to that one person. It happened to be Victor Rodriguez for Xander Bogaerts back in Boston a long time ago. But think about that. I mean, there's probably so many people trying to tell him, you know, what to do. He's probably asking. Everybody knows how to fix these things. And one thing you can't do is be thinking in the middle of your at-bat, like we saw Xander do for 2 months and looked like crap doing it.
I'm sure he, you know, if he happens to be driving around and tunes into 97.3 The Fan, listening to five of the more unathletic guys you've ever seen, telling him, hey, man, this is what you just zone in on your pitch. Like, it's such a freaking hard thing to do, and especially when it's not going well. And it's not going well. Jackson, did anybody ever get the sense watching Jackson Merrill last year where it's like, man, that guy, because when I saw him hit, the guy was like a caged tiger waiting to get up there to hit because he knew
swagger.
He was going to do damage. Bro, you can see it now.
He has like, zero swagger in the box.
Let's go up and take an AB. It's not a healthy place to be if you're a hitter, and especially if you're, you know, one of the top four hitters in your lineup. Most days this season, it's just got to be a really lonely feeling for him.
To go back to Manny, like you said, though, like Manny, when I think he has said this before, when he's in a slump, he says, I'm just going to hit the ball as hard as I can.
That's it.
C-ball, hit ball.
C-ball, hit ball.
I mean, as dumb as that sounds, and, you know, I mentioned that on the show, and people in the YouTube comments were freaking out, like, oh, well, what a great analysis. It's honestly that simple stuff.
Xander said it in that interview.
C-ball, hit ball,
white ball,
crush
hit,
it.
Hit the white ball.
And then you know what? You find a hit, and then all of a sudden, maybe it's a little bit of relaxation for you.
I think also he had zero expectations last year. Anything good was good. And this year,
he's definitely getting challenged more this year.
Signing the contract, doing all that, and getting the extra pressure that comes along with being a franchise player. And I don't think that he's like nervous or anything like that, but he just definitely does not look comfortable.
It's grinded.
Yeah, he does not look comfortable. Like when he swings at that pitch high and away, and then he just puts his head in the air and walks back to the dugout. And you could see him contemplating life as he's walking back to the dugout.
It looks like he's seen a ghost, dude.
Yeah, it's crazy to me how different he is.
But we love him, and we all think he's going to be fine. And
his mental makeup that we've talked about so much is a big reason why he's going to get out of it.
It's why he's going to get through it.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. So there's a consensus here that there's a psychological factor at work with Jackson Merrill and the Padres offense. We talked with very smart Padres blogger Letters to AJ, and his theory and, you know, the numbers that he has to back it up. Petco Park has a poor psychological effect on hitters, this year especially, where fly balls have been depressed. The Padres especially, who do hit hard balls to center field often, are not getting rewarded for it. And that, of course, in turn, makes them feel like they're failing. Is there, Matt, in your mind, is Petco Park damaging the Padres' psychology when it comes to their hitters?
That's a very interesting way to put it, Petco Park psychology. Maybe a little bit, because you can see the other teams hitting home runs, and when you're hitting long fly balls, it's warning track power, and I don't understand that. But it seems like it's always been that way for the Padres at Petco. I don't think that it's damaging the psychology of the team, but I do think that it's hurting the team that they have currently built at Petco Park right now, because they're not the home run hitting team. They're more of a gap hitting team, and so it's not working out for them. When they lift a ball, it's getting caught at the warning track, and it's very frustrating to see.
But Woods, they do hit home runs when they pull the ball. Luis Arraez, Gavin Sheets, they hit the balls that they pull. Other teams don't hit home runs to center field either. The Padres just hit a lot of home run or a lot of deep flies to center that always die at Petco Park. Is that a result of a philosophical issue that the Padres do need to be pulling the ball more than they are right now?
I think I'll be thinking about what Dylan said today on our show for the rest of, if not the day, then the rest of my life. The example he gave was Jackson Merrill hitting a ball 106 miles an hour with a perfect launch angle. That's a home run. And Jackson's a young player. And Jackson gives it everything he's got, hits it as perfect as he could hit it, and it doesn't go out. It's hard for a human being, a 21-year-old, to go, all right, I did everything I could, I'll just get him next time and do, you know. In your mind, you're like, no, I got to change something. I got to pull that. Or I got to hit it better, even though I don't think I can hit it better. Yeah, it's going to mess with your head. I don't know the answer, literally, other than move the fences in 5 feet. It's the only answer that I have. But then, you know, you run the risk of Nick Pivetta's ball. Those two balls are out by 10 feet the other night, you know. So it's an interesting way to think about it. But I think you've seen frustration with Manny. You've seen frustration with Xander. You've seen frustration with Crony. These guys have barreled baseballs that should be home runs, and they're not. So how does it not mess with you? It has to. It has to. Probably harder than striking out. You know, I hit that ball as good as I can hit it, and it didn't go out. And what's worse than that? Nothing. Nothing's worse.
To get, like, psychological on it, like, kind of what Dylan was talking about this morning, is like a team can come in for three games and just go, hey, this is how it's going to be for the next 3 days while we're playing at Petco Park. So we're just going to tweak things a little bit on our approach or whatever. Like, they're able to adjust.
Because they're leaving.
Because they're here for 3 days and then they're gone.
And like you said, Ben, if they have a bad offensive series,
No big deal. We just got Petco. On to Cincinnati right.
You got
or on to San
against
Francisco.
A good team, yeah. A quality team, whatever.
No big deal.
But like,
we can let it eat.
If you're a Padres player and you sign here, whatever, you're like, I'm here for all season long, like at least 81 games. Like, what's going on? What are we going to do about this? And I don't know what the answer is, other than like Wood said, move the fences in 5 feet.
It's sad, Braden, because Petco Park seems to be such a great home field advantage with the crowd and the atmosphere. That it would be also damaging to the home team because of how depressed the numbers are.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, like, the teams that the Padres have had that have been pretty good have been line drive teams. They can hit the balls in the gap because that's what Petco Park is, you know, really designed to do. So, you know, I think the Padres, in terms of, like, their overall construction, they get a lot of benefit from their pitching staff, right? I mean, how many times have we seen the Padres closer make the All-Star game or lead the league in saves, regardless of who it is? And see a lot of these bullpen arms turn into like studs when they come into Padres uniform and starting pitchers. I mean, I think guys like John Garland back in the day that like resurrected in San Diego for a couple of years. But you don't want to, like, with the park, it's interesting. There is an advantage of having a pitcher friendly ballpark when you take on these power hitting teams. The downside is obviously not being able to hit the long ball offensively. And I do think it plays a little bit of a factor. I mean, guys that come to San Diego know it's going to be hard to hit the ball out. Just like when they go to Colorado, they know, hey, we're going to pad some stats over here. And same thing in Cincinnati. So I think it probably plays a little bit of a factor. Also now with Baseball Savant and all the analytics, you can even see how many ballparks you hit a home run in that are not going out at Petco Park. And that's probably also incredibly frustrating for a lot of these guys. But I think Woods hit it on the thing. I mean, when you square up a baseball and you think you gave it everything you got and it's still not going out, there's some serious like self-eval right there, especially when you walk back going like, I did not get under that. I totally squared that up. Why did that?
I can't do any better.
I can't do any better. And
you're either over-swinging, trying to like add some more emphasis on the swing, or you're trying to change your approach.
Trying to lift.
Now all of a sudden you're thinking during your at-bat. So I could see that being a problem. But you know what? I mean, if they got to hit the gaps as much as they can and try to play that style. I mean, you have to play to the style that you're playing a game in 81 times out of the year.
Yeah.
You can't really do anything about the park at this point.
All right. For our next question, I'm going to ask all of you to try to set aside both your fan optimism and your fan dooming and just call on your Padres baseball watching experience and your baseball fan knowledge in general. As we mentioned, the Padres have alternated wins and losses this entire month. That is not going to continue forever. At some point, they will either hit a hot streak that will get them back, you know, comfortably into playoff position, or they will hit a cold streak where they may bury themselves the rest of the season. As you look at all the potential factors, the moves that A.J. Preller could make, maybe getting, you know, Yu Darvish back and Michael King back, maybe the bullpen runs out of gas because they're overused. Is the offense going to turn around? Analytically, do you think it's more likely that the Padres go on a hot streak or a cold streak when this run of 500 is over? Paulie, I'll let you go first on this one.
Oh, it's so hard to predict when you all the moves that AJ could potentially make. You have no idea what that's going to look like. All you know is what you currently have, and as the roster's currently constructed, I would certainly say it's more likely that they go on the cold streak than the hot streak.
Why do you say that?
Well, I say that because they got off to such a good start that they were able to mask a little bit just how bad the offense was. And whether you want to go back to June 1st or May 1st, or I think Sam Levitt was on with us this morning and he said it was like April 18th, like the first game after that really good start to the season. They're like second to last, if not last, in every offensive category. That's a big enough sample size where you can say, yeah, they got hot to start the season. They've been a bad offensive team. And that all that's going to do is put more pressure on the bullpen, which has been elite. Some of the best performances in the major leagues in the Padres bullpen right now. But that can't. That's not going to hold all season long if every time you play a game, you have to bring in a reliever in a high-leverage situation, because they're not blowing anybody out. They don't have these opportunities, unless they're losing big, to get, you know, Hoeing, Peralta, Matsui, some of those guys, some work. Every single time, it's high leverage right now.
I think you make a good point about the pitching, and they could run out of gas at some point. But what you said is also why I tend to lean toward a hot streak is coming. they can't be any really worse offensively than they are. Right. They can only get better. No matter what moves AJ does make at the trade deadline, there is really only room for improvement. So if their pitching can just hold on to where it's been, and it could, especially if Yu Darvish looks like Yu Darvish and Michael King comes back, then there really is only one way that this Padres team can go.
Up.
And that would be up going forward. We've seen the worst version of this team, and they managed to hang around 6-7 games above 500 at really the worst version of themselves. So is it possible that the only direction that this team can go is up? But, you know, any team can suffer a bunch of injuries at once, and that would take out anybody else. You share my optimism, Woods?
No.
Okay.
I do. Okay. I do. I totally agree with you. And I think for the pitching side, I think having elite pitching is going to carry them and win games where they're not going to spiral out of control. So if I had, you know, like you asked, what would be more likely? I think it is more likely they go on a winning streak because of the way that, you know, aside from Cease, starting pitching has been pretty good. You're expected to get Michael King back in the month of August, and the reports from him have been great. Again, a nerve issue. It's not, he's not going to injure himself. It's just kind of a tolerance thing. You've already seen Yu Darvish come back, and he's felt good the last couple of days after his start. Your pitching staff is getting a little bit healthier in the starting staff, which I think will help your bullpen. And Paul makes a good point. I mean, hot pitching and high leverage is going to do some damage, but I think you got a lot of veteran relievers that embrace that kind of role, and I think they're going to be okay. I think the pitching is going to carry them. And as you mentioned, Ben, their only way is up right now and at bats, and until the trade deadline passes, you don't need an all-star. You need a couple of just average Major League Baseball players, and I think that makes a world of difference for this lineup where you don't have to watch, no offense to Bryce Johnson and Trenton Brooks, but they're not in the lineup. They're down. They're not even on the team. They're in El Paso.
Well, what's the counter then? Because where are you afraid of the performance slipping even further? Is it the bullpen?
No. Well, yeah, and the reason is I'm so excited to get Michael King back. I was so elated to see Yu Darvish come back, but Yu Darvish threw 63 pitches. He's going to be on a pitch count for a while. Michael King's going to be on a pitch count when he comes back. You know, these aren't workhorses that you're getting back. You know, this isn't Dylan Cease, a guy that's going to take the ball every 5 days. Like, yeah, exactly. But like, you know, those dudes are going to have to be carefully monitored for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it may be, and you may run out of time. And if the offense doesn't find a way to figure it out, and I don't know that they will. You know, we've got 2 weeks, 3 weeks till the trade deadline. I do like the idea of staying afloat, but you have to stay afloat. Like, you have to win today, and you need to find a way to win at least one of those games against three nasty-ass pitchers from the Philadelphia Phillies. You got to find a way to not go into a, you know, 4 or 5 game slump before the All-Star break hits, then you regroup. The All-Star break will do wonders for this team. It will do wonders for this team. I really believe that. But again, Benny, like, there's nothing that shows me these guys are about to figure it out offensively. Nothing. Other than there's nowhere to go but up. That's the only thing that tells me. I'm not seeing a lot of bad luck. I'm seeing a little bit of bad luck, but I'm not seeing a ton of bad luck. And again, with the guys you have at the bottom, the guys you have catching, the guys at the top that aren't producing, I mean, you're asking four, five, six guys to get hot.
My worry, Matt, is that this team cannot withstand, like, even a single injury.
No.
Could be devastating. If Nick Pivetta went down a month, where would the Padres be?
Toast.
If Manny Machado was down, I know he never is, but if he went down for a month, where would the Padres be? There just is no depth whatsoever. That would be my biggest concern about a potential second half kind of meltdown the wrong direction.
Yeah, that definitely is a huge concern. And, like, this team, yesterday the Giants lost and the Dodgers lost, and the Dodgers have lost six in a row. This is the time for you to gain ground on the Dodgers.
This was the time.
It
was the time.
And you're not doing it right now. But the depth is definitely a problem. And then when you have Jackson Merrill and Fernando not doing what we think they can do, it just makes everything brighter. And then you got guys like, I like Trenton Brooks, but I'm ready to see him elsewhere and have some other player DHing or something like that. Put Gavin Sheets in the DH and have someone in left field. Those guys are not going to win a championship for the Padres. They can help, but they're not going to do it.
Is T. Wade in the doghouse? What?
I was thinking that last night.
Where has he been?
Yeah, where's the spark? They need a spark. He's the spark plug. We see him almost none.
Every time he's in the game, he does something weird. Something weird happens when he's in there. I know his OPS is not great. I know he doesn't hit for power. I know he doesn't hit. When he's in there, good things happen. You know, it's
he's kind of like the perfect bench piece.
He's the
versatile
and
run.
If Trenton Brooks is getting all these ABs and Bryce Johnson is getting starts, where's T-Wade?
Was it the third base in Cincinnati?
Was it the error? You know, he went in for Xander. Xander had a cramp and he booted a ball. We lost that game. I don't think so. I don't think Schilt is like that. But where's he been? He legitimately is a spark plug for this team. They all wear T-shirts with high T because of Tyler Wade's infectious energy and spark. And he's sitting rotting on the bench, not even getting pinch hitting low.
Sounds like a great question for the manager's report
tomorrow. I will ask him tomorrow.
Talk fun with that. Good luck.
I will.
Godspeed. What did T-Wade do? What did T-Wade do? Why do you hate T-Wade so much?
Hit the halfway point here of our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. I think we all agree the ultimate goal is to get to the playoffs and then, you know, take your chances and see what happens. Now, to get to the playoffs, the race is starting to shape up in the National League for wild card spots. You've got the runner-up in the NL East is probably in pretty good shape, whether it's the Phillies or the Mets. And then you've got another five teams or so that are competing for the other two spots. You don't have to be a perfect baseball team. You have to be better than three of those teams. So as we look at this race, Braden, the Padres, how do you compare them against, say, the Brewers, the Giants, the Cardinals, the Reds, and even the D-backs, who are still under 500 but have at least hung around long enough that you can't completely eliminate them? I mean, I look at those teams and not one of them screams, oh, well, we're dead against those guys.
How many you have to outdo how many of them? Two?
Two of them.
You need to outdo two.
Three of those five.
Outdo three of those five. Yeah, I'm not really afraid of any of them. And the only one that's really gotten you is Arizona. And you can look back to a couple of games against Arizona that you probably should have had that you ended up screwing up yourselves. I mean, I know the Padres lost 2 out of 3 to Cincinnati. The game on Sunday, they probably should have won. And when I was watching them play Cincinnati, aside from Nick Martinez pitching out of his mind, there was nobody in Cincinnati that was scary. I've watched enough Giants games to just be like, I don't know how this team wins, period. I mean, they got an inside the park home run, 3-run homer to win a game the other day. I mean, that's like one of the luckiest things I've ever seen. But they don't scare me. I know they got good starting pitching. Milwaukee, you went there and took 2 out of 3. I know they just swept L.A., but they're a team that doesn't scare me either. And then the last team is the Cardinals. I mean, we're talking about a Cardinals team that was willing to trade away arguably one of their better players during the offseason. And, by the way, a team less than two years ago said, we're not going to be competitive for the next 3 years. I look at the wild card race. It's not like you have to outdo the Phillies and the Dodgers.
You're competing, right.
You just have to outdo three of those teams, and none of those teams, in my opinion, are like way beyond better than the Padres.
And the funny thing is about those teams that you just mentioned, the Brewers, the Cardinals, and the Reds. How active are those teams going to be at the deadline? Does anybody get the sense?
No, none of them are ever really active, ever.
I'm sure John Mozeliak in St. Louis is like, damn it. You guys going out there, being in it has ruined our plans. Like,
not supposed to be in contention.
You guys aren't supposed to do this.
Let's say we
wanted to ship this guy and this guy and this guy. Now, how do we, the St. Louis Cardinals, best fans in baseball, self-proclaimed, how are you going to sell that to them? We're selling. We're selling Sonny Gray.
Like, even like the Reds. Like, let's think about the Reds. Like the Reds, you know, I've heard from people in Cincinnati, like they think that the Reds want to make a little push because they haven't made the playoffs in a long time.
Right.
Their fan base is getting irritated. And they got young talent. But even if the Reds make a splash, like, have we ever seen the Reds really in the last couple of years go out there and make a ton of moves, even if, like,
that's
they're competitive?
The thing is,
like, I don't think they're going to go out there and make, like, a gigantic move. They might go get a bat, you know, like, or add on the margins, but to me, in order for the Reds to be scarier than the Padres, they'd have to go make some serious deals at the deadline, and I don't think they're going to.
All three of those teams.
Yes.
We need to make some really – the one that scares me, man, is Milwaukee.
Because they're always around,
because
even when they trade their best players
around. They're hanging around. They have star power on their team. They are well managed by Pat Murphy. Well managed. And I see they are willing to go out and acquire a Yelich. They are willing to go out and acquire guys. They did it with CC Sabathia years ago.
They
and
also
rode him. Like, they'll make a splash. Can you out-splash them and then play better?
But they will also trade away their all-star closer in the middle of a – I mean, they were in it that year when they traded the closer – when they traded Hader to the Padres.
It's true.
And remember how Remember how upset Devin Williams was?
Yeah, he was furious.
He was so pissed off.
I think their season will be determined on whether Mizorowski hits a bit of a rookie wall at some point or if he skeins his way all the way through the rest of the year. And if Woodruff can come back without missing a beat after, you know, 2 years essentially gone, will he be the pitcher that he was? If he is, Milwaukee's in pretty good shape for one of those spots. If they're not, they could falter in the second half as well.
Milwaukee does scare me, but I wouldn't sleep on the Reds. A lot of my friends out there are really excited about this team.
They should be.
Because, Ellie De La Cruz, although he's not the greatest defensive shortstop, he's great at the plate. He could steal a bunch of bases. And they could put up runs in a hurry. Yep. And they can go on win streaks in a hurry. And that's something that scares me. If they get on a late August win streak and then they put themselves way up at the top of the wild card, you know, they have Andrew Abbott. They have they have good pitching.
Nobody's even mentioned Terry Francona, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. Him and his fishing chair at the top of the dugout.
He knows how to do it.
So you got to be better than three of those teams, right? So
we've three of those five teams. Yeah.
So if you come in second place, you're better than two already,
right?
And then you have to outdo one of Brewers, Cardinals, or Reds.
I think if the Padres can
pass, very obtainable.
I think the Padres, if they can get ahead of the Giants, they're a game behind them, and stay ahead of them, the path to the playoffs is pretty open for the Padres.
Last thing, like the Giants, Buster Posey scares me a little bit because he's not afraid to make moves.
He wants it.
And he's been there when San Francisco wins, and he knows what kind of town that place is when the Giants are good.
Yep.
And he's not afraid to go and cut a Lamont Wade Jr. just because.
Yeah. Padres, 4-2 against the Giants? They got seven left, I think. Those are probably the most important seven games left for the Padres this season. There is one team that gives me a little hope, though, and it's not one this year. I keep thinking back to the 2023 Diamondbacks and how they got to the World Series, almost won a World Series, by simply hanging around, having a good second half, getting into the playoffs, and getting hot. I mean, it is a recipe that the Padres of 2025 could absolutely follow.
Nationals did it in 19.
I mean, no one was even talking about that Diamondbacks team until all of a sudden they were in the World Series.
I mean, they 86 wins that year?
They were supposed to be obliterated by the Phillies, and they were in the first game. Oh, here goes the Phillies year. And then all of a sudden we're watching the Arizona Diamondbacks play in the World Series going, how did this happen?
Against the Texas Rangers.
Right.
So we were like doing the exact same thing.
Right.
All right, let's get to our seventh inning stretch question. Take a little break from baseball here on our roundtable.
Did Woods and Paul just take a gigantic deep breath on the roundtable?
You're in such deep.
You're in trouble.
Tomorrow on our show at 6 a.m., you're going to want to be
there. I'm glad the
drama, man.
I'm going to get you. I'm going to lash you.
The people should have seen you guys off air.
The drama was
dying.
Hilarious.
I thought maybe this question was too silly for our show, but you like this
such
one.
Such a great question.
So last week we saw The Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest, Coney Island. Joey Chestnut wins again, 17th mustard belt. So today's inspiration for the seventh inning stretch. What's the one food you think you could eat the largest quantity of if you were like entered into a 10-minute eating contest? Not necessarily your favorite food, because favorite foods can sometimes be heavy and hard to eat.
Yes.
Which is the one that you feel like you could pack down the most of in 10 minutes if you were challenged to do so? Matt Scraby, I'll let you go first.
Mine's going to be weird because I've been thinking about this. I'm going to go pot stickers, like dumplings.
Okay.
Oh.
Because they're small, and in 10 minutes, I could just shove a bunch of those in my mouth, and then I'll die later.
They slide right down the gullet.
Yeah, it's easy. You don't really have to chew much. You're not dipping buns into water. That's disgusting. You're not doing that whole thing. But I think, like, dumplings, pot stickers, I think I could eat, like, a bunch of those in 10 minutes.
Yep. Braden, what would be your food?
I would probably be like, to me, is like New York style pizza, like a thin crust pizza. Like,
how many pieces?
I burn the roof of your mouth. I worry about this one.
But like, you know, like
they're huge.
The place in Scripps by my house, Pazzo's, like their party size pizza, like thin slices. I can inhale that thing.
The whole thing.
Like, oh yeah, and I'll eat the whole thing in like 5 minutes. Wow. And I am the slowest eater of all time. But it's like thin. I could just cheese or something like that.
Yeah.
I could totally down that.
The bread worries me. When I see Joey Chestnut, it's the buns that look like they do the real
thin
damage.
Crust,
so it'd have to be really thin. If there was any, now, I don't want anything bready. And my choice
fills you up.
My choice, sushi. sushi roll, like pieces of sushi.
Yeah. So there's a rice thinking about somewhat similar to bread.
Yeah, just a small bit of rice though that helps the fish go down, and just one. I can eat those pretty fast. They're cold.
Yeah.
I think hot would be hard.
Yeah, hot.
So I'm looking for something that's on the colder side. If I wanted to eat a lot of it, I'd go with like just. Like spicy tuna roll, go, 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 go.
I can see that.
It's probably
that's
a really
choice.
It's a really good question that probably would have been better posed in the 4 hours that we get rated on. And, you know, I ask Ben every day, hey, any ideas? No, nothing. No, all right. Okay.
And then find out he's got this goal.
He's sitting on this goal, and he saves it for the round table,
which
Braden gets rated on.
Which is great during the 10 o'clock hour. We love it.
Mother of God. It's like, this guy's been doing radio for
I'm dying to know what your answer is. I'm dying to know what your answer is.
A quarter century. It's deviled eggs.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about
that. See, now I'm thinking cool hand. Too many eggs is a bad thing.
Look.
Yes.
Look. You don't want to be around later, but in the moment, 10 minutes of unloading. Every Thanksgiving, my mother-in-law makes them for me, and I walk in, I look over my shoulder, nobody else really likes them. I will put down six, just like this, 1, 2, 3, 4,
they're easy,
five,
they're
six.
Easy.
And I'm like, and I walk away, come back about 10 minutes later, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've murdered 2 dozen in a day.
What is that car ride home?
It's not great. It's not great, but man, I can get those things down.
Paulie, wrap this up
a little
here.
Like
competitive eating food for Paul Ryan.
God, I was right on the same page with Scraby. I was thinking of like the Din Tai Fung, the soup dumplings. Oh. They just go down so smoothly. Oh, they're so good. You get them room temperature,
well,
I guess.
So.
I don't know. You got to think about that for every food, though. Is it going to be hot, like the bread and all of that?
I would imagine most of the food that's because they have it like sitting out there.
Yeah,
but
it's all
time cold. To cool. Like, so they're not piping it right out.
I'd love to
right
say
there.
Ice cream, but then you get brain food.
No way.
No way. Can't do that either.
Can't do the ice cream.
I'll say wings, but it's got to be. It would have to be the boneless, like basically chicken nuggets with some sauce.
Chicken nuggets.
Because
how many nuggets can you eat?
How many? I don't know.
2 dozen?
Could you eat a 20-piece from McDonald's?
Oh,
easy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've done it together.
My brother
and Hila Ben.
We've done it in Hila Ben.
My brother and his friends do that game all the time. How many chicken McNuggets do you think you could take down? They're like, 80. Easy.
We each put down a 20-piece.
I couldn't do super hot buffalo or something. That would wear you down. The problem is if it was just the regular wings, the bone-in wings, like I would be so
afraid
caught up
game.
On like, did I get enough
did
of
I get
that?
Enough
like,
of this?
Is there still some? Is that going to count?
Is this qualify?
Like, looking at the judge every time.
And I've seen people that are good at eating wings. They can just like in and out, and it's just a bone. I don't know how they do that. I'm like, it takes me 30 seconds to like figure it out.
Gnawing on the same
how do
piece.
I attack this thing? So if it was like the boneless nugs.
That's 10 minutes we could have had on prime time.
Ben.
Prime time.
I was afraid of the 20-piece when I was growing up. I would not let myself have more than the 9.
Afraid of the 20-piece.
Yeah, that
piece.
Felt like a family-sized portion.
It's kind of close.
Yeah, it's supposed to be. But.
See, I couldn't do it like in an eating contest, again, because you think of the buns, but like my cheap-ass dad, I'm sure Woods can relate, on Sundays, 39-cent burgers or whatever it was that McDonald's used to do, we'd go in and you're like, oh, here's $5.
Yeah.
I can crush like 6 of them.
Yep.
The little like plain McDonald's hamburger or cheeseburger.
Delicious.
You can go down
easily. What about like meatballs?
Oh.
Ooh.
Those are dense, dude. Like,
those are
like
dense.
The cocktail.
Cocktail
ones. Yes, cocktail like meatballs. The smaller ones.
Yeah, the ones like the in the jelly meatballs. in the crock pot at Christmas.
Yes.
You could eat a lot of those.
Yeah, I could too.
It's a good call. Good call.
Saltines.
All right, let's go from a silly topic to an unfortunately serious one, and one we did discuss on our program. Evan Drellick from The Athletic reporting that Rob Manfred is at least testing the waters and pushing toward the idea of a salary cap when CBA negotiations start up again with the collective bargaining agreement expiring at the end of next season. Braden, what's your worry here with baseball's future? Do you think they could actually go the 1994 route, and we could see a work stoppage that costs us actual games, and what would that mean for the sport?
I think it could. I think you're flirting with that big time here at the end of 2026. But I think baseball does need a salary cap and a salary floor. Now the thing is, you know, the players are going to get something out of this. I mean, the Players Association is one of the best. So I think at the end of this, there will be a salary cap. Now, I don't know if it's going to be as strict as maybe as the National Football League, but I think there'll be something in place. And I think the players are going to get something major in return that the owners don't want to give up. I think this is going to be one of those years where you get some of that. But yeah, I think it might take a lot of time. I mean, we might be in a situation where we're starting games in after the 4th of July or something like that. Obviously, that sucks for us five up here trying to navigate shows without baseball. But I think it's come to a head now where, you know, enough teams and a lot of big market teams don't like what the Dodgers have done with the deferments. Maybe that might be the first move before they get to a salary cap. They eliminate deferments. But there's going to be, I think, a drastic change to roster construction and money allotment after this last CBA.
I don't know. What's the first rule of owning a golden goose?
Don't kill it.
Don't kill the golden goose. Baseball is a golden goose for both owners and players. And, Paul, I think they both know it, that the fastest way to kill the golden goose is with a work stoppage. Yeah. They almost killed the golden goose in 1994. What is it? What could players get? If the owners really, really want some sort of cap, as Braden said, what do players want to make their lives better? Shorter season? You know, 154 games? More days off? What is a possible compromise situation look like out there?
Do they have revenue sharing with the players? I don't think they do, right? The Major League Baseball.
There is elements of it when it comes to like playoffs and okay. You know, get a
certain playoffs.
But it's not like the NFL where these guys are getting.
It's not like the NBA or the NFL where the salary cap is set to a percentage of revenues. The owners keep a certain part of it. The players keep a certain part of it. It's kind of a brilliant way to, at a fair way to do it.
I agree.
But one that the Baseball Players Union has always resisted against.
I was reading that article this morning, and did I cut someone off? Sorry. I was reading this article this morning, and they said, and one of the players, anonymous players, was quoted as, "Why do you guys want this so bad that you're pushing it so hard on us?" And there's so much distrust between players and owners in baseball that I just don't see this coming. I don't see them coming to an agreement on this.
There's just so many different owners and types of owners.
Right? You got the Colorado Rockies.
All the players are together. They're together. They're one big fraternity. And
the owners have their own cliques.
Yeah, and then you have your owners that are like, I know I get revenue sharing money, but I'm not giving it up. That's how I keep the yacht going. That's how I keep the mansion going. And listen, the worst part about all this, the absolute worst part, is the discourse between fans and players and fans and owners. And now you have a certain faction of fans, which I understand. You get your ass up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you go get in your truck, and you go build a building, and you're like, oh, do you guys not get enough days off? You know, you make too much money. I get it. They're the best 1% of athletes in the world. Nobody can do what they do, which is why they get paid what they paid. I'm always going to side with the players 100% of the time, but I know that I'm only half of that equation, because there are a lot of people that will side with the owners a lot and say these guys are spoiled and they need this and blah blah blah. I just can't find myself siding with management on this one. I really can't. I'm in the player's corner. That's who we go to see.
I side with whatever makes the league the most competitive league possible.
Correct.
That's not
necessarily a free market system.
But you know who doesn't make the league as competitive as it should be? The owners. They're the only ones that have the control to make it competitive.
If you're dangling a salary cap and every team's competitive and you got a salary floor, as a baseball fan, I don't really care what side that is.
Exactly.
I'm in.
But if you get to that point is going to be so difficult to do.
Well, the question is, this is what I bring up all the time in this discussion. Do you want a league that's player friendly, that's not as competitive, or do you want a league that's very competitive, that's not player friendly? Because you have the player friendly league is Major League Baseball. It's not as competitive. You have all these teams that want to spend money, and then you got all the teams like the owners that you're saying that don't want to spend anything.
Right.
Or do you want the NFL type league of everybody's got a chance at the beginning of the season because everybody's playing by the same rules, but the players have the worst end of the deal compared to any other athlete in the United States?
I think Braden's got a good
point. That's kind of the deal.
Let me put it this way. If Oklahoma City had a baseball team, where would they finish every year? Dead last.
Awful.
They'd be horrible. But they just won an NBA title because of the system that the NBA has.
The Chiefs are a powerhouse.
And while...
Right, but like baseball has only had one. How many repeat winners have they had in 26 years? Like none, right?
Not repeat, but they're almost always from the top 10 in payroll.
Same teams almost are every single playoffs, year. Right?
There's an occasional, the Kansas City Royals, there's an occasional exception to every rule. But the rule is there in baseball. If you're not a big spender, what worries me is the Dodgers example. The Dodgers are already pushing it to the envelope.
They're very smart.
What if Jeff Bezos wants a baseball team and decides, you know what, I'm going to pay everybody $150 million a year because I can afford it and I want to win, and there's nothing stopping me because there's no salary cap. That's not good for the league.
It's good for the players.
It's great for the players, but it's not good for the fans. It's not good for the league. I think the only successful system is the one. It's the commercial you see during the Padres game. What is it? Fidelity Investment. We do better when our clients do better. There has to be a system in which, when baseball is doing well, it benefits both the players and the owners at the same time. And if it's doing poorly, then they both have to take a haircut. You can't have them always fighting against each other, where either the players get more or the owners get more.
But it's not that black and white, because with 30 owners, we had Peter Seidler here who said, screw you guys. I don't care how big we are. I'm spending my money on this team. And then you had the guy in Colorado, Dick Bart, saying, we're not, like, they can't do this. This is, you know, blustering, Bob Nutting in Pittsburgh.
John Fisher.
This is not sustainable. John Fisher, all these guys. Why do those guys get bailed out? Those guys shouldn't get bailed out.
Well, here's the other thing, though, too, that the NFL has that MLB doesn't have. They have one TV contract.
Right.
They all share it.
They share it.
They are all on the same. The owners are against the players in that kind of instance, but those owners are all on the same page.
But you think
where baseball's not, because if I'm the Yankees,
you're not giving up
why would I give up Yes Network
if you're the Dodgers?
So the A's can make as much money as us when it's us and it's the Dodgers and it's the top echelon teams.
So whose fault is that? It's the owner's fault. It's the players don't have any. They have no recourse. They have no decision making at all on what happens with our TV contract. Who controls all that?
The only other thing I would say, and I'm not an owner defender, but I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. They take all the risk. They own the team. They take all the risk. The players don't take a risk. You know what the players do? If the team folds or the team sucks, they can go find another team. They don't take the risk on running the entire organization. So there's different problems for different levels of money. It's not as easy as, like, well, these guys are getting $1 billion and these guys are getting $1 million. They have their own problems that they have to settle. The biggest problem with baseball is they can't collectively get on the same page from the ownership standpoint.
Yeah, those 30 guys are always on a different page.
Because they all have their own different, I got to get mine. They're all selfish in their own right.
Yeah.
And it leads to this, you know, bad ordeal. Where in the NFL, they are screwing over the
gotta
players.
They got to fall in
They're
line.
They're screwing over the players, but you know what? They all split the same amount of money.
But you're a football guy. Like, how does that make you feel?
Business wise, though.
Does that make you feel? Like, in this article it mentioned, you see it every year in pro football where it's a bloodbath. Pro bowlers getting cut, right?
Yeah.
Then they go to the quarterback. They save all this money to sign a quarterback. Then they go to the quarterback and go, hey, can you take less money so we can get this wide receiver? That sucks for the players.
It sucks for the players. But guess what? What's the most popular league in the United States?
Yeah, it's the NFL.
It is. It's the most competitive. I guess one way to look at it is every single game is coming down to the wire on a Sunday.
I guess if you look at it, you can always say, if you don't like our system, you don't have to play pro.
Nobody's
you
making
don't have
you
to play pro
that's,
ball.
That's the deal that you signed up for.
I understand, Braden, that theoretically the owners are investing money and they are taking a business risk.
You can't generalize with the A's owner.
But what
owner.
Major League Baseball owner ever went under because they owned a baseball
team?
Their roulette wheel is like 35 red spaces and one black space, and they just keep betting on red because the odds are so stacked in the owner's favor to make money.
Yes, but
and there are owners that lose money every year.
They have risk.
They can still sell the team for three times what they bought it for.
The valuations are
going up every single year.
These guys are making money.
It's not as big of a risk to me because the valuations each year go into the billions now.
Right.
But there's risk in ownership of a company is what I'm saying.
Well, then don't buy the team.
I'm just saying there's risk. Like, you have to defend your risks of your assets that you invested in. These guys that all own teams make a ton of money for a reason, because they've been doing that for forever.
But bottom line is, to answer your question, is that baseball can ill afford this. It can ill afford it. Baseball's in a really good place right now, as much as competitively sometimes it sucks.
That's the only silver lining I can find is that it's going to get ugly. And hopefully, when you get to March of 2027 or whatever, they're like, all right, we can't afford those games.
We saw it a couple
years ago.
But they do know that as fans, as long as we don't miss a regular season game, We will forgive them.
We'll be back.
We'll hate all the animosity.
Yep.
We'll complain that these guys are all greedy. The owners are greedy. The players are greedy. We will do it as well. But if they come back and we don't miss anything,
we're good.
We'll be good.
No harm, no foul.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if they miss a half a season, a whole season,
you're gonna lose people.
It's bad.
You're gonna lose people.
All right. Sounds like we're done. Thanks to everybody who showed up today. That's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Have a great day, everybody.